Welcome to Season 3 of White Shores, the podcast for spiritual beings having a human experience. Let me invite you to walk once more beside me on White Shores to talk about the real meaning of life. Let's discuss dreams, rituals, intuition, angels, the afterlife, and other infinite possibilities within and all around you. Season 1 featured interviews with some of the world's leading scientists researching consciousness. Season 2 focused on honest practitioners, and the theme of this Season 3 is regeneration, rising like a phoenix from the ashes of confusion, pain, and loss. I hope every episode offers you much needed comfort, inspiration, hope, and perhaps even a little joy during these challenging times. So, now the scene is set, allow the grey rain curtain of this world to roll back and all to turn to silver glass. Let's walk barefoot on the gentle, glistening sands of White Shores and pause a while to gaze at the horizon to see what magic lies beyond the material. Walking beside me today on White Shores is one of the world's leading experts and authors in past life research and therapy. If you've ever had a feeling you've been here before, or you've just met someone and they feel familiar but you have no idea why, or you've often been called an old soul, or you are simply intrigued by the idea of your spirit surviving bodily death and then being reborn again in a new body, this episode is perfect for you. And if your eyes roll with exasperation whenever the subject of reincarnation is mentioned, or you despair that any intelligent person could believe this, keep on listening too, please. Reincarnation is a subject I'm open-minded about. I haven't made up my mind yet, so I hear you. But it's a subject I'm fascinated by, and it's also a subject that I get asked a lot about, including recently by BBC Radio 4 for their Beyond Belief radio programme, where they were going to explore and discuss the topic of reincarnation. They asked for my expert opinion. I often point people in the direction of the amazing research of the late Professor Ian Stevenson. Now, Ian Stevenson was a psychiatrist by training, and he was actually a very noted psychiatrist because he was named Chair of Psychiatry at the University of Virginia. He shot to notoriety with his meticulous studies of children's memories of previous lives, and I do urge you to go and check them out because they're very compelling. Because the thing is, when children have past life memories and have and offer details that there's no way that they could know, it really does wake you up and think, how is this possible? How does this child know all this information about this person from another time and place that they couldn't possibly know, and they're too young to be making it up or to be told by their parents that this is what happened? So really do check out Professor Ian Stevenson's past life recall research, especially into children. So there is that research out there into reincarnation, because Stevenson is not the only one who researched this. So if the research is out there, the data, why isn't science taking it more seriously? The reason probably is, as is often the case with paranormal experiences, that the data, the anecdotal evidence, doesn't fit our working model of materialistic brain science. The wish to not to believe, Stevenson himself once said, can influence as strongly as the wish to believe. So all I'm asking you, if you are very dubious about reincarnation, is simply to open your mind and listen to what my guest has to say. Listen to the possibilities she presents to you and her ideas about reincarnation, karma, and your soul perhaps having been here before, or even choosing its next life. I'm not trying to convince you, and in every episode of this podcast, I'm not trying to convince you in any way. I'm just offering you information, authentic voices, people who speak from their hearts, to open your mind to new possibilities. As I said, I'm not sure where I stand myself on reincarnation, but if you listen to my guest, her warmth and honesty shines through and feels real, and she's also every day helping people heal. If you want to know more about the possibility of reincarnation, do check out the show notes about my guest, and also do check out a very special episode in season 2 called Deja Vu, where I speak to another reincarnation and future life expert called Robert Schwartz. And that episode is what among the most downloaded of season 2. So do check it out. It's called Deja Vu. And as always, do stay tuned after the interview for a musical and literary gift from my heart to yours. And it's a gift this time that's all about the force of eternal love that I believe crosses space, time, life and death, and which I believe may make reincarnation possible. It's produced and played by my son and Royal College of Music scholar and the producer of this podcast, Robert. Music and poetry are, in my opinion, languages of the soul. So you've got both combined here. And now, without further ado, it's time once again to meet someone new, but don't be surprised if what she says sounds familiar. You've heard it before. And that's because whenever words come from pure heart and soul, they always feel like home. Stay tuned. If you would like to find out more about my books, warning, I'm a serial spiritual writer, as well as my features, media, mission, and talks, please do visit www.teresachung.com and subscribe to my newsletter for updates, as well as free gifts and incredible stories to your inbox. If you have any questions, insights, or stories to share, please email me at my trusty angeltalk710@aol.com email, or message me via my author pages on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. I aim to reply to everyone in due course. Season 1 of White Shores can be found on the podcast page of my website, and all seasons can be found wherever you download your podcasts. Be honoured and grateful if you could leave a review, as it helps spread the word that spirit is real. Walking beside me today on White Shores is a past life adventurer and explorer. Her name is Joanna DiMaggio. She earned her Master's in Transpersonal Studies degree and her Spiritual Mentor certification through Atlantic University. She has been actively involved with Edgar Cayce's Association for Research and Enlightenment since 1987, and she has given talks on the subjects of past life exploration and soul writing to audiences across the states. In addition, she has been the guest on nearly 70 radio programs and has had several articles published in Venture Inward. She has been professionally pursuing past life research and therapy for over 30 years and once headed her own past life research center, where she interacted with some of the country's leading past life professionals. The author of 6 books, Joanna conducts private sessions at the Unity Holistic Healing Center. Her upcoming title, I Did It to Myself Again, New Life Between Lives Case Studies, Show How Your Soul's Contract is Guiding Your Life, answers many questions about the afterlife. I'm so excited you're here today, Joanne, after that amazing bio I just read. I can't wait to talk to you. Hello.
Well, hi, Teresa. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Thank you. Let's plunge right in. I'm going to talk about your intriguing afterlife and past life research and your book shortly. But for now, the world, I'm sure you would agree, is chaotic. Don't you think we have got enough on our hands making sense of our current life, let alone worrying about the past or the future ones? Love your thoughts on that.
Well, I'm asked that a lot, and especially now people are asking, why am I here? Why now? If I've deliberately chosen this life, why would I choose to be alive during such a pandemic that we're going through right now? Well, I can just tell you that nothing is random. This life that you're leading now has been carefully designed. It's part of your soul's plan. So the experiences that you're having in this time and in this place are really enabling your soul to grow. You're working on karmic issues from past lives. You're applying karmic attributes to help you deal with those issues. And in doing so, you're impacting others. So you're serving as a role model to those around you as you deal with your own concerns and fears about this pandemic. And that in and of itself is a healing for others and for yourself. And, you know, because the things that we did in the past are really about the present when we're doing this sort of work. So it really has everything to do with the here and now, but it's influenced by what's happened in another lifetime.
Thank you. Beautifully put. Let's turn the spotlight on you now. Where did this fascination with past lives and the afterlife, I mean, it's an unusual thing to research, let's face it. Where did it start? Please tell us about yourself.
Okay, well, I was born and raised Catholic on the south side of Chicago, Illinois. And I went to 12 years of Catholic schooling. And during that time, a lot of questions came up, things that didn't make any sense to me. The whole idea of sin didn't make sense to me. The whole idea of you only get one chance at this. And if you do something wrong, you're going to, you know, have to spend eternity in hell. So I began asking a lot of questions and did not get any answers to my satisfaction. So I began to, when I was a teenager, I started to read about Edgar Cayce. Those of your in your audience who don't know Edgar Cayce, he was the most renowned psychic. I believe he was a mystic more than a psychic in the 20th century. He passed in 1945, but he left 14,000 readings, 12,000 of which were health readings, but 2,000 were life readings in which he addressed the past lives of those folks who came to him for a life reading. So he would tell them that what they're dealing with now is the result of something that they had dealt with in a prior lifetime and that they needed to resolve it and heal it. So I really fell in love with Cayce at a very young age. I started reading other books like Ruth Montgomery, Jess Stern. So this was back in this, I would say the late 60s sometime. So then after that, I went to college and majored in 18th century American history. And I loved that period. And there were a lot of hints during my childhood that I may have had a lifetime then. And I didn't know it then, of course. And so I had a professor say to me, you know, you have the most uncanny feel for the 18th century of anybody that I've taught. And I thought, you know, I do. Where is this coming from? I mean, I'm living in a blue collar ethnic sort of neighborhood in the south side of Chicago. So this didn't make any sense. But it wasn't until 1987 when Shirley MacLaine's book Out on a Limb became a mini series here. I remember it well. It aired in January of 1987 on ABC, and I was mesmerized. And when she started talking about her past life experiences, it was like I woke up. I think it was the wake-up call for a lot of sleeping metaphysicians. So that same year, I joined the ARE, and they were bringing in speakers from all over who were past life experts, and I just resonated to everything they were saying. And one of the speakers said to me, you know, Joanne, you know more about past life work than most of the therapists that are out there. Why aren't you doing it? So he planted that seed. And in the 1990s, I actually began to, I got my certification, a hypnotherapy certification, and decided to pursue this professionally. And I've been doing it ever since.
Fascinating. Thank you. That's why I wanted you on this podcast, because I was really intrigued by your book, and especially because it includes data from your research project. I think you chronicle the journeys of some 20 or so men and women, right, who believe that they have, you know, been reincarnated or had a past life and how that past life is impacting them today. And you also explored the afterlife to see what souls do between lives. And during that, your research subject showed the role that karma played, I believe. Can you talk to me about this? With so much interest now in karma, especially with what's happening to the world today. Can you talk to me, what is karma? What do you believe about it? What is your research indicating? Just can you talk about karma, please?
Sure. Well, karma is the law of cause and effect. What you reap, what you sow, you reap. And everything that we do, everything that we say, everything that we think is recorded in the Akashic records. That's where all of our past life information is stored. That's actually where Mr. Casey went when he would do a life reading with someone. He would go to the Akashic records and pull down their book, so to speak, and then read to them about their past lives. So if you have some unfinished business from another lifetime, that carries over as karmic residue into this lifetime. And during the research project that I did with the 25 people in this particular study, they went back to lifetimes that a good 25% of them went to a life that happened prior to 1000 AD. So you don't work on these issues chronologically. So it's like the lifetime you had immediately before the one you're in now is not necessarily the one where these karmic issues came up. So it was important to look at their past life first to find out what happened to them in that life. Was it something they did to someone? Was it something that someone did to them? Was it an illness or was it a trauma? And we would go through that significant event because that left an imprint on their soul as unfinished business. And then they brought it with them. So in other words, something happened to them. They didn't get it resolved in that life, but they put it aside thinking, I'll work on this in another lifetime when the circumstances and the opportunity is right for me to do it then and there. So the past life gave us the origin of these karmic issues, what created them, who were involved, and why they weren't resolved. And so when they went then into the afterlife and they had their session with the Council of Elders, you know, I asked them, what are the karmic issues that you're, now that you know about that past life, what happened then that you didn't finish that you want to work on now? And I had them just give me like a bulleted list of what their karmic issues were. And the answers I got were very wide ranging. Some of them said they had to work on anger or guilt or forgiveness or abandonment or humility or responsibility. These were just some of the issues that came up in another lifetime. The origin was in another life, and they needed to finish that up. I use the analogy of Earth as a school. And so we come to the Earth to take on a curriculum, a specific curriculum. And those classes are either, you either pass the class and then you don't have to deal with it anymore, or you don't pass the class and you have to repeat it, or you've not taken the class yet. So all of this is about the soul's desire to experience life in a physical realm, because all these things cannot be experienced in spirit. So we take these things on. You know, if you were abandoned in a previous lifetime, then in this lifetime, you very well could set it up so that you are abandoned at some point. So that'll balance that karma out. So basically that's it. If you just think of it as the law of cause and effect, I think that pretty much sums it up.
Thank you. That's really interesting. I'm going to go back to your research on these 25, you say, mm-hmm. men and women. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me how you find out if someone believes they've had a past life? What's the process? I mean, I don't understand. I'm trying to get to the science here. How is this study done?
I have access to people who are what I call like-minded. So I put the word out to members of the ARE, and I put the word out to members of my local Unity Church, because those are the people most likely to believe in reincarnation. And I said to them, I'm doing a study on life between lives. If you're interested, then let me know, and I'll give you an appointment to come in. I also told them that I prefer to work with people that have had a regression already, because the length of these sessions is such that I didn't have the time to work with people that were new to this. So everybody that came, the 25 people who came, had had regressions before, either with me or with another past life therapist, or even in a group situation if they went to a conference on the topic. So the interesting thing about my group is the makeup of it. There were 20 of the 25, 23 were women and 2 were men. And that's unusual. I usually get more males to come into these sorts of projects. And the average age was 62. Didn't really have any young people. And then they were from various really respected professions. I had social workers and educators, and I had a lawyer, nurses, a flight attendant, therapist, just people that you would think if you met them that they were likely to come up with wild, exaggerated stories that they were going to try to make you believe. So they all had a lot of credibility to them. And so I never have a problem finding people for these research.
No. How much do you delve into the science? I mean, of course, Dr. Ian Stevenson was the pioneer there with the scientific research into past lives. How much do you concern yourself with that? Or are you more on the spiritual side that the science isn't?
I would say I'm definitely more on the spiritual side. I mean, I do the statistical data because I want to sort of walk that line and document everything, because to me it's when I write my books, and if they're based on my research, I let my research subjects tell the story. It's not me pontificating to other people to say this is the way it is, people. I say no, this is their experience, and take it or leave it, basically. So, but when all of their experiences congeal and they're telling you basically the same thing, then I think there's a lot of credibility to that. So if their description of the afterlife is pretty similar to the next person's description, I would think after 25 of those, you would say to yourself, well, you know, these people didn't know each other. It wasn't like they had a chance to get together and share what their thoughts were on the subject. So so I really think that it's more on the faith side and the spiritual side, but there is, and as much as you can document this sort of thing, I did have some of my volunteers want to delve deeper into their past life to see, you know, to look at what was going on in the world in the year that they said they were living and in the place that they said they were. So if somebody said they died in a plague in England in the 1600s, you know, they actually would start to go delve into whether if in fact was a plague at that time. So there's that kind of intertwining. I don't think that they needed the scientific evidence for them to believe in the experience. I mean, this was a very personal, transformative experience for these people. It was very emotional. None of them, they may have come in thinking, I'm going to make up the story, or what if my imagination takes over, but they didn't leave that way. And they all had a lesson. They all had their aha moment as we went through it. So I it may not fill the criteria of a scientist, but I think that there's elements of it that certainly do.
Thank you. You touched on the afterlife there, the individual experiences of the afterlife showed common themes, and I found that in my research and writing too. Can you tell me what their experiences of the afterlife was? How did they describe it?
Oh, sure. The first question I asked them was, "How does it feel? What does it feel like to die?"
Because I think please share.
Where people, that's where the fear is coming in, right? And I think right now, with this pandemic, a lot of us are experiencing that fear. But they said that they were fully conscious at the time of death, so they knew that they were dying. And they had a sense of relief and freedom and release For most of them, it was a very gentle and painless process. Others said that they felt like their soul was being squeezed or popped out of the body like a hard yank. 92% of them said that they could move around freely afterwards, and most left immediately. They, you know, in a near-death experience, many of those folks say that they hover over the body because then they can talk to the doctor or nurse and say, well, I saw you do this, or I remember you did that. That wasn't the case here because they knew this was a one-way ticket. And so they left. Those who had a traumatic death would leave the body before the body actually died. So if it was a particularly painful death, then they would leave before the actual death took place. So in going in through the afterlife, they just talked about mostly that it was a very freeing experience and that it was a shift of frequency. And there was a lot of energy that was swirling around so that they could travel with ease and they could travel very fast and very far. So they had this sense of flying. And then when they got there, you know, we talked about, did you see a gateway? Did you see an entry portal? Because I think about the story about St. Peter at the pearly gates that I was taught as a Catholic. And none of them saw that. They did see a gateway, and they were greeted then by a karmic committee of souls that were there to welcome them. And one in particular would step forward, and that was their primary guide. And then that entity then would be their escort and kind of show them around and have a conversation with them about the life that they just led and offer some compassionate explanation about why it went the way it did and how it's all good. Sort of put their little arm around the soul and, you know, pat them on the head and say, it's okay, it was fine. Because, you know, I had a lot of souls who would say, oh, that was the most worthless life I've ever had. And it really wasn't. So they got that little pat on the back. You know, and then from there they would go to their spirit home. This is where they stayed. And all of them said that whatever they would think they could materialize. So if they wanted to create the home that they had on Earth, they would be able to do that. If they wanted to be in a simple log cabin, that's where they would go. That's where they would stay as they were working on the past life and, you know, their Council of Elders session and then everything else that went along with it before they were able to come back.
Thank you. You just mentioned Council of Elders there, mm-hmm. and how they assist you in mapping out your next life. Can you talk about the Council of Elders? Who, what are they? How do they help?
Sure. They're a group of wise beings and ascended masters. They're loving and non-judgmental, and they've been with you since the beginning of time. I asked each participant that when they went into the council chamber, if they could identify how many elders were there that they were going to work with. And the research I did on my own, what other authors have found was that there's usually 3 to 8 maybe elders. My group had 5 to 20. 54% of them were male, or male essence. 32% were female. 11% were androgynous. And then we had 3% that appeared to them as nature or spirit entities. Many identified them. When I asked them, what do they look like? Almost all of them commented that they had gray-haired, bearded men wearing robes on the council. And I think that's more of what that symbolizes. The gray-haired, bearded men symbolize the wisdom, and the robes symbolize judgment. Although a lot of them were fearful of being judged by the council, this wasn't the case. I think you equate the Council of Elders to your guidance counselors at school. So you're going before them. They have your report cards out in front of them. They can see what classes you passed, which ones you didn't. And then they offer you guidance on setting up the next lifetime. It was really kind of funny because when I asked them, you know, who's on the council, I did have many of them say that they were biblical characters. So Jesus, Mother Mary, Mary Magdalene, Moses. Dr. Michael Newton, who's really renowned for the work he did in this area, said that absolutely none of his subjects ever saw a biblical character. So the fact that almost all of mine did and none of his did sort of raised the question about why, you know, why would so many of
I guess it's from your frame of reference, isn't it? You're going to see what you're familiar with.
Perhaps what you're most comfortable with. It makes you a little bit more at ease. Yeah.
Yeah.
But most of them were regular people. They weren't, anybody.
Yeah. Is this where your soul's mission or your soul's plan is formed in this between life state?
Yeah, you look at you work with the council to make a list of your karmic issues. Then you work with them to make a list of your karmic attributes. These are the positive things that you've already accomplished in your past lives. You don't have to work on them again. So things like creativity or passion or leadership skills or intuition, those are all positive karmic attributes that you're going to be able to draw on in your next lifetime. So by the time they get through all of that, they know what they're coming to do. So I use the teachings of Casey on this as well, because he talked about a soul having an ideal, and that's why we're here. Because Casey said no soul enters by chance. Everyone comes with a purpose. So the ideal is something that is above and beyond us, toward which we build. So my ideal is to empower and inspire through the written word. So by the time I worked with all these folks, when we got to this point, they were very quickly able to state what their ideal was, what their purpose was. So I would get answers like, my purpose is to be a light on the path, or my purpose is to be a teacher of peace, to spread unconditional love or whatever. It was a very short little phrase. That was their spiritual GPS. This is their guidance on where their life ideally could go. And, it can change over a lifetime, but basically having that guidepost, having that knowledge of why you came back here was one of the greatest assets in this study as far as these 25 individuals were concerned.
Well, thank you for sharing that, because I think knowing your meaning and purpose, it's like a light, isn't it? When you know that, suddenly everything transforms in your life. And thank you for helping people find that through. Some people listening may think, well, this all sounds really out there. But I'm just asking people who are thinking that if something helps people find their meaning and purpose and makes them a better person and the world a better place, that in my book, that's wonderful. And that's what you're doing, Joanne. So thank you. And I'm very interested in what you talk about. How can people find out about their past lives? You talk about memory triggers. What are they? Because I haven't had any past life recall. I'm fascinated by the idea of reincarnation, past lives, but I haven't actually had any memories or visions about any previous life apart from this current one. But can you just sort of give some advice about memory triggers that you mention?
Sure. So memory triggers are intangible things like a knowing or about something. It's mostly most people think of it as deja vu.
Right, I've had that.
Inexplicable feeling of having been somewhere before or having known someone before, but you don't know where or when that happened. So that happens all the time, and it happens to everyone. But whether they apply that to, this is a piece of a puzzle that spirit is giving me to help me remember my past life, I don't know that necessarily happens. So there are things like countries. You have an affinity or you resonate to a country other than the one that you're living in, or historic locales or time periods. As I said, I was fascinated with the 18th century American history. And actually, that's what brought me to Virginia, where I live now, because I was living in the Chicago area most of my life. And then, I thought, this isn't home. And after college, I started visiting all the historic locations along the Eastern Seaboard. And lo and behold, when I got to Virginia, my soul just let out this collective sigh of relief, like, you're home. It took me 25 years to get here, but I'm here now. And, you know, other things like landscapes, like people have to be in the mountains or they have to be near the ocean. Colors can serve as a memory trigger. Certainly music does that. If you hear a certain piece of music, you know, does your mind start to wander to another place, another time? Movies and books do it. Certainly, some people say numbers, that there's like a series of numbers that when they see those numbers, it triggers something with them. So it's really interesting if you pay attention to these synchronistic events in your life, how you can start to put the pieces of the puzzle together. Because every piece unto itself doesn't mean anything. It's only when you put it together that you have this beautiful mosaic that is the life that you led before.
I love the way you describe that. You're describing being a mystic in a material world, really. And mm-hmm. that's what you're saying. And it ties in with a lot of what I talk about it, but obviously you approach it in a different way. But I really understand what you're saying there. Can people train themselves to remember their past lives, or do they need the help of a mentor? What if somebody wants, you know, someone like me, for example, I'm really interested in this. Mm-hmm. How would I? But I haven't had any, you know, past life memories or dreams. How would I, what's the next stage? I mean, reading your book, obviously, so please talk about that. But how would I train, I mean, in my daily life? I mean, you mentioned looking at coincidences, deja vu, synchronicities. Is that dreams?
If you look at everything that you resonate to, things that wouldn't make any sense, you know, like I used to listen to Baroque music when I was a kid.
That's unusual. You
know, right. You know, like, who does that? Right. So, but if you really sat down and looked at it, look at your taste in music, in architecture, in books, in cultures, and in religions. I mean, if you really made a list of everything in your life, of the pros and cons, or things that you love, things that you absolutely, they drive you crazy, you would start to get a picture. As a matter of fact, I do teach a class on the resonance method of past life recall. This is for people that are a little leery about doing a hypnotic regression. So that's one way of doing it. Meditation certainly will give you glimpses into a past life. I teach a method of writing that I call soul writing, which is actually a written form of meditation. My second book, my first book was on soul writing because that was my thesis. My second book was on called Your Soul Remembers, and that was all about how you can access past life information using soul writing. I wrote an entire book about my 18th century past life using that method. Oh. I would just go into a meditative state, put the pen down on the paper, think to my, you know, ask for guidance. Well, I would always say a prayer first and white light protection, ask for guidance and say, you know, or leave it open. And very early on, I was getting diary, what read like diary entries. So it would be dated 1792 or 1802 and they read like some sort of a romance novel. And I was like, yuck, I don't write like this. But it turned out that what I had done was submerged my conscious mind and allowed my subconscious to come forward and allow the past life aspect of who I had been before to actually do the writing. So that's a way of doing it as well. And I did do another research project with that, using the soul writing to find a past life. So there's a lot of ways. And of course you can work with a therapist, a past life professional. I do them online, regressions online. Especially now during the pandemic, I don't see clients in person anymore. But we're able to do it online. Actually, it's better, which surprised me, because I think people are in their own homes and they're comfortable in their own chairs, and they can get in a lot deeper than they can if they have any apprehensions about being in a strange office. So there's all kinds of ways. And, you know, pay attention to your dreams. Sometimes, you know, you can get hints through the dream, or you might, like I said, you could listen to music or see a movie, you know, and there's all kinds of ways for it to
triggers.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. You got me really excited about this. As I said, it's not a subject that I haven't actually written a book about it or researched it in detail, reincarnation. It's something I've always been asked about and I'm always never quite sure. And you've really given me such pause for thought. And what I love about you, Joanne, is that you talk about something that was so mind-blowing, really, in such an intelligent, everyday way. It's like, yeah, sure, we have past lives. Yeah, sure, we go and talk to the elders. I like that. Because you're clearly a very intelligent woman. You can hear that in your voice, very warm, very empathetic, and, you know, highly educated. And you just talk about it in such a relaxed, non-hysterical, normal way. And that really is golden. Thank you.
Oh, thank you for saying that. I appreciate it. It's such a part of my life.
I can tell. Yeah. Normalizing what is extraordinary, finding the extraordinary in the ordinary. That's what this podcast is all about. And I urge everyone listening to please check out Joanne. Can you please tell us where to find out about your book or books? I realize you're a multiple author.
Yeah.
And also where they can find out about you and maybe book in for a reading or to find out more about you or to ask you a question. Where can people go?
My website is joannedimaggio.com. It's joannedimaggio.com. And I have on there the type of regression services I do. I do three different types of regression, so people can choose based on what they're looking for. Information on my books is there. All of my books are on Amazon. And information on soul writing, if that's an area that people are interested in pursuing, that's also on the website, along with news on my new research projects or what I've got coming up. And
yeah, you look very busy. Yeah. You're certainly living your soul's mission. And with the spelling, everyone, I'll put it in the show notes, so you don't need to worry about that. I'll put Joanne's website and all other details that she wants me to in the show notes. So thank you, Joanne. And before you go, a question that I torture everyone with, because this podcast is called White Shores, and that's because of my love of Lord of the Rings. Because White Shores, of course, is the Undying Lands, where the elves and every, you know, it's death, basically. It's a beautiful way of describing the spirit, the invisible. I have found in my life, and I'm glad you've mentioned movies a lot, that movies sometimes have deeply spiritual, inspiring themes. I do believe in movie therapy, actually. Is there a movie that you can recommend, can be about reincarnation, doesn't have to be, that you feel is really something that you'd recommend for people to watch, especially during this difficult time that we're in right now, that's got a spiritual theme?
Well, there's two that come to mind. One is directly about past life work, and that's Defending Your Life.
I don't know that one.
Yeah, Defending Your Life is with Meryl Streep.
Thank you.
That I think people would truly enjoy, because a lot of the things that people told me in my research project actually were in that movie. So that's
why. And I thought you were going to say Cloud Atlas or something.
No. The whole idea of, you know, the life review, about karma, they had something called a past life pavilion where you can actually see the bodies. And we didn't talk about that now, but, you know, you do get to select your next body, as well as select your parents. And so anyway, it dovetails really well into the research that I've done. So I would recommend that one. And just an uplifting, one of the most beautiful movies I've ever seen, one that whenever I see it, I say to myself, gosh, I wish I could write like that, is Field of Dreams with Kevin Costner. There's some aspects of it because they do have folks that have passed over coming back and teaching lessons to the people that are in the here and now. So those are my two favorite movies of all time.
Thank you, Joanne. That's great. That gives, you know, go and watch those films, but above all, go and check out Joanne and her books, her many books and her research. And thank you for being such an inspiring guest, Joanne, and keep doing what you're doing, please. The world needs people like you right now.
Thank you. I hope our paths cross again soon.
So do I. Thank you. thank you from my heart for being here and walking beside me in spirit on White Shores. Sensitive, kind, and compassionate souls like you who see beyond the material are needed more than ever today to help the world heal. Thank you to Clan Ree for the blissful episode music, and do check out the show notes for all details about this episode and my contact details. I'm going to say goodbye for now with a musical or literary offering, a piece of heaven for you to take away and store in your heart as you return refreshed to your one precious life. Until we meet again on these white shores, keep being amazing spiritual you, sending my eternal love and gratitude. Death is nothing at all. It does not count. I have only slipped away into the next room. Nothing has happened. Everything remains exactly as it was. I am I, and you are you, and the old life that we lived so fondly together is untouched, unchanged. Whatever we were to each other, that we are still. Call me by the old familiar name. Speak of me in the easy way which you always used. Put no difference into your tone. Wear no forced air of solemnity or sorrow. Laugh as we always laughed at the little jokes that we enjoyed together. Play, smile, think of me, pray for me. Let my name be ever the household word that it always was. Let it be spoken without an effort, without the ghost of a shadow upon it. Life means all that it ever meant. It is the same as it ever was. There is absolute and unbroken continuity. What is this death but a negligible accident? Why should I be out of mind because I am out of sight? I am but waiting for you for an interval. Somewhere very near, just round the corner. All is well, nothing is hurt, nothing is lost. One brief moment, and all will be as it was before. How we shall laugh at the trouble of parting when we meet again.